Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
First this morning, the National Immunisation Advisory Committee, or NIAC, has recommended that the AstraZeneca vaccine can be used for those aged 70 years and older in fresh advice to the Department of Health. Now, the new recommendation may clear the way for the AstraZeneca vaccine to be used for this older age group. And we're joined now by Chair of the National Immunisation Advisory Committee, Professor Corina Butler. Good morning to you and welcome.
Good morning, Claire.
It seems to be accepted this morning that the new advice will be taken on board by the Minister. What is that new advice? Can you clarify it for us?
Yes. Well, in the beginning, with the first advices in terms of the use of the AstraZeneca vaccine, you'll remember that the European Medicines Agency and indeed the WHO SAGE, their advisory group, recommended, as did we, that the AstraZeneca vaccine could be used in all age groups. However, everyone recognized that there was very little data, or relatively little data, on its use in those who were over 65. So at that time, there was more data available on the mRNA vaccines in that, and because as we grow older, we don't necessarily respond to vaccines as well as younger people, there was just that caveat, would it perform as well in those older age groups? So the AstraZeneca vaccine, as you know, have been rolled out in the UK, and that started on the 4th of January. And in the week before last, there were three publications that came out from the UK looking at its real-world effectiveness. So when we're looking at clinical trials, we talk about vaccine efficacy. That's how they perform when everything is very controlled. And effectiveness is how they perform when they're out there in the real world and all the normal glitches and ups and downs of delivering it to people are involved. So they may be the same, but often you might see a drop. But in fact, particularly in the Scottish data, where as best one can estimate that data, there were actually a lot of people in the older age groups, maybe upwards of 300,000 above 70 who got the AstraZeneca vaccine. And in fact, their effectiveness was as good as in the younger age group. So that gave great comfort that this vaccine was indeed performing as well across the ages. And so obviously that gave a little bit more flexibility. And yes, we reviewed our advice as we do all of the time, keeping all the new information under review. And in the normal course of events, that advice would be given to the Chief Medical Officer in the Department of Health. But then that has to be considered because there are also experts there to look and to make sure. And it doesn't necessarily mean that that would or should alter vaccine implementation programs. We are now spoiled a little bit for choice in terms of the vaccines because we've got three good vaccines. We've got a fourth one just licensed. But then it comes down to logistics of how and where to deliver the program. And that goes then through the department and on to the HSE to do that.
But you're clear that you are recommending that this AstraZeneca vaccine can now be used to the older cohort.
As we have done is that what we are clear about now is that from the Scottish data that it has performed as well in this early course across all ages. Now, there are certain caveats with everything because right from the beginning, these vaccines were only first put into use anywhere in December, and that was the mRNA vaccines. And the AstraZeneca was only started rollout, as I said, on the 4th of January. And so the follow-up, the duration of follow-up in these studies is by of necessity limited. So it's only in the order of about 4 to 6 weeks on average. And what we know is that over that time, it performs as well across the age groups.
I'm already getting messages from people like, John, do I have a choice what vaccine I get? I'm over 70
no.
And I feel I will refuse AstraZeneca.
No, there won't be a choice in vaccine. And we would encourage people to take the vaccine that are offered. Very often, those refusals are somewhat based on a lack of understanding of what is, you know, the effect of the vaccines. But both these vaccines, all the vaccines that we've had available at the moment, it's the Moderna, the Pfizer and the AstraZeneca, have proven to be extremely effective. In the Scottish study, it essentially virtually eliminated severe disease, moderate disease in those age groups, and had effectiveness rates that were similar, in fact, no difference from the mRNA vaccines. Okay, so that was very encouraging data to see.
But we have seen concerns in other countries where the vaccine in Denmark in particular has been withdrawn for a short period. I know you addressed this last night at the press conference because of concerns over blood clots. Yeah. And again, people are getting in touch with us this morning saying, are we worried about this here? Should we be doing the same?
Yeah. Okay, yes. Well, whenever any safety signal comes up, then it is natural to be concerned and to look for information. And so what was reported and the reason that the Denmark have paused their vaccine campaign was because of small numbers of clotting events that they were concerned about. And so absolutely then the first thing to do is to look and look at the agencies, the EMA, their pharmacovigilance risk assessment met first on Wednesday, I think it was, and that was in relation to Austria had paused a specific batch of the vaccine thinking that there might have been something related to it. And then again, they met yet again yesterday with the Danish reports and looked at all the reports of clotting and found that in terms of clotting overall, there was no increased risk over and above what would be expected on background. But they are continuing to investigate the situation to see if there's anything particular about those. The other issue, of course, that we know, and in everything in vaccine, it's always a risk balance, that the risks of COVID and the risks of clotting related to COVID for people who end up in ICUs with COVID, the risks of getting clotting is 25%. And we also know that in those who've had COVID, even who've had mild COVID, there is a risk of clotting after that. And there have been reports of, for example, strokes in young people following COVID. So those are the factors that have to be looked at because vaccine safety is paramount.
Have you had any reports of clotting after people have had AstraZeneca in this country?
The HPRA have looked at that and there have been some reports of clots, not serious. I think there have been two reports, but in situations where they would be expected, just one, and not over above what would be expected in those populations. Because also bear in mind, the populations who have been vaccinated at the moment tend to be our older people, are now those with high risk of other conditions who may have other reasons for developing clots.
So you're not at the
for
point.
For example, can I explain?
Yeah.
If we look at the clinical trials, for example, the Janssen clinical trial has just come out where you've got people who've got the vaccine and you've people who haven't got the vaccine. And they had been looking at clotting and clot disorders in that. And the rates in those who were vaccinated were 0.06% versus 0.05% in the placebo recipients. So essentially no difference. But it is important and we have to pay attention to it. And there is a rapid assessment ongoing. But the EMA concluded that the safety profile favoured very much the vaccine and that it should continue to be used.
Okay.
And for others, the MRHA, and they've been using the AstraZeneca in more people than anywhere else, they have 11 million doses have been administered and they have seen no overall increase in clotting events and they have recommended continued use. And to put it in a kind of perspective, in the European Economic Area, there have been 5 million doses used and there have been overall 30 clot events, which is a very small number and would be what you would see in the kind of population that you're giving that to.
Okay.
But absolutely, we have to keep a very close eye on this and to watch because vaccine safety is paramount.
What about the advice, Professor Butler, surrounding the gap between the AstraZeneca vaccine doses? How has that changed?
Well, the AstraZeneca vaccine was authorised for administration, anything between 4 and 12 weeks. And again, as the data has emerged, interestingly, what is being confirmed, as was suggested in those initial studies, was that with the vaccine, you actually, first of all, from the very first dose of the AstraZeneca vaccine, by 20 to 22 days, you got a very significant, you really got a big benefit with up to 70%, over 70% efficacy against serious disease or hospitalization. What they found was the longer, if you extended that gap out from 4 weeks to 8 weeks or to 12 weeks, not only did you not lose any of that efficacy, it actually seemed to increase a little bit, but when you delayed giving that second dose, you got a much better response than if you gave that second dose early. So essentially what you were doing, what we would call a prime and boosting, it's like you introduce the vaccine to your immune system, and the immune system has to get to know it, and over those weeks it's getting to know it well, and so that if you leave it a little bit longer, you have recruited more people, more cells that know it, so that when they see it again, they can have a very prompt response and make a very strong immune response, and the hope is that that then would give more lasting immunity against it.
So you're saying now that the gap should be 12 weeks?
The gap can be anything from 4 to 12 weeks, and what we're recommending now is that we leave it at least 8 to 12 weeks. But there may be situations for some reasons that you want to get those vaccines done quickly, and it can be given. It is authorized for use after a four-week interval, but there does seem to be benefit to stretching that interval out more towards the 12 weeks.
And that will have an impact on supply, would you say?
Well, hopefully, because it means that for those who've had their first dose of AstraZeneca vaccine, they know that by 21, 22 days, they are going to have very, very significant benefits of protection up in the high levels, and that then they don't have to worry about getting that second dose until about 12 weeks later. And that gives time for more supplies to come in and also gives time to get the vaccine that we do have out to more people.
You spoke last night about the elderly and the vulnerable, who we know have had very restricted lives over the last year. There may be some good news for them in all of this. You spoke about visits from grandchildren perhaps being allowed, but we'll talk about the difference between the visits and the hugging in a moment. But explain to us what the vaccine bonus might be in the short to medium term.
Well, I was trying to think, having been asked about it last night as well, is how do we explain where we're going with all of this? We know these vaccines are effective in rolled out into the real world. And what do we mean by that? We mean we're talking about 70% effectiveness or efficacy. So what does that mean? What that means is it's reducing your risk of getting infection by about 70 to 90%, okay? It doesn't eliminate it. So you have to look at what's the risk in the community. If the risk is low in the community, if we've got the levels of infection in the community very, very low, there is a small risk. And now we're adding to that this added protection of 70 to 90% protection. So you're almost making that risk negligible. If the risk in the community is high, if there's lots of virus circulating, if people have high levels of virus and they're in that pre-infectious stage when you meet them, you are still reducing your risk by 70 to 90%, but you're reducing it from a much higher risk level, and so your residual risk is going to be higher as well. So in protecting people, we want to make that risk as low as possible. If you've got two people who are vaccinated, that risk is going to be very low. If you've got a vaccinated person who's going to meet an unvaccinated, it depends what that overall risk is. So for the elderly, when they are vaccinated, there are high levels of protection from them, but we want to bring that risk as low as possible. if viruses circulate in the community, it's still not a good idea for people just willy-nilly to meet them, but you might want to restrict their number of exposures, and you might want those who meet them to continue, to absolutely continue with all the normal public health measures, using their face masks, being careful about sanitizing, meeting where there's good ventilation. As the weather gets warmer, that can be outside. Children inherently have lower risks of transmitting the virus, even if they have it, and particularly if they have no symptoms, even if they do happen to be carrying it, the risk of transmitting it is lower. And added to the vaccine protection, that will allow for hugs. But what we all need to do is to get the levels of the virus down in the community so that we are really making any residual risk almost zero.
So just to be really clear, a vaccinated granddad can meet the grandchild and hug that grandchild if transmission rates in the community are at a very low level.
If transmission rates in the community are at a very low level. And so that's what we need to do. And that, if anything, was the slight mood change yesterday, in the sense that, disappointingly, we seem to have stalled. And it's disappointment for everyone. So we really need to try and drive those rates down further so we can get down to that point where we do feel comfortable about getting back towards that normalcy of interaction.
Now, Johnson & Johnson on the way, we hear, hopefully towards the end of May, probably a little bit later than people would have hoped,
yeah.
And we're getting less of them than we would have hoped too.
Yeah.
Are you recommending this vaccine, and we know it's a one-shot game changer, as we're told, are you recommending it for all age groups?
The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, they had actually very significant numbers of those in the older age groups, and so yes, it will be recommended again now from over 18. Unfortunately, most of these vaccines have only been studied in over 18, the Pfizer BioNTech in over 16. There are studies going on down to 12, and some studies planned going down even younger. But for now, all the recommendations relate to those 16 to 18 and older, depending on the vaccine. But there's no upper limit to the age range in terms of the vaccines.
And is there news on how effective that new vaccine is, or the one-shot vaccine is, against new variants?
Yes, actually, there is. I suppose the trials of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine were going on at a later stage than the trials for the other vaccines. And so there were already some of these new variants circulating. And so the activity against the variants was very encouraging. Within the trial, there was good activity against the South Africa variants and at least against one of the Brazilian variants. And they were the ones that there were enough of the variants within the trials to actually show efficacy.
Okay.
So that has been very encouraging.
And we're hoping to see that towards the end of April, not the end of May, as I think I said earlier. The Sputnik, we've been told here a number of times on the programme, Corina, that Ireland could look at approving this outside the EMA process. Is that something we would ever consider doing?
Now, that is beyond in terms of the remit of NIAC. I know that all sources of vaccine are being looked at. I'm also aware, and there have been alerts issued as well, in that some countries have, and I'm not saying this in relation to Sputnik, by the way, but some countries have fallen foul of some, believe it or not, some scams related to promised supplies of vaccine that actually, outside of the procurement, that actually didn't turn out to be anything other than a scam. In terms of the Sputnik vaccine,
is that a warning about going outside of the EU procurement process?
Exactly. Some countries have actually been caught out in that. I wouldn't have even thought that would be possible at this stage, but that is the fact. In terms of the Sputnik, it's undergoing the rolling review at the EMA at the moment. Certainly the initial studies of it look very encouraging, very similar to the other vaccines that we have available. And so obviously any approved vaccine, we would welcome the ability to roll them out to people here, because I think vaccine is the way out of this at the moment. And the faster that we can get people vaccinated, absolutely the better.
The Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, has said that you're doing a full review of the population regarding the rollout of the vaccines. What exactly are you looking at there?
Well, this is really just a continuation all the time. And looking, you'll be aware that recently there was a readjustment to the prioritisation, with change for those who are at high risk. And so what we need to do is to continue to look at that and see, is there any benefit to selecting out specific groups versus progressing down on an age-related, because we know age is the dominant. Age is the dominant risk factor with COVID across everything else, across workplace, across comorbidities, across everything. Age is kind of your basic framework. Your risk goes up both to get it and to have outcomes related to age. So if you're doing anything that deviates away from that, then you have to see, is that justified? And so that is what's continuing, because there are other groups, there are other areas that we might feel the risks are higher than maybe for an age equivalent if they weren't in that group. And so that review is ongoing. Okay. But the balance, and the other thing that you have to factor into that, is that if you get something where it's so complex that it delays the administration of vaccine, then that might counterbalance any selection of specific groups, that they, you might actually get to them faster with a more streamlined process.
Okay. Just before we let you go, a quick one going back to AstraZeneca and the recommendation that it should be used now for the older cohort. Will that mean a delay to cohort 4, the medically vulnerable being vaccinated?
No, let's step right back, because what we've said is that, yes, NIAC have looked at this and taken on board the new information that has gone, and that has only just been submitted to the Department of Health. They probably even hadn't had time to look at it yet. And then that has to be considered in terms of all the other issues in implementing the program and where the program is. And it doesn't necessarily mean that any change to the program is indicated, because bear in mind, all the vaccines we're talking about are very effective for those in whom they're given. So just because there is what is actually quite a minor shift there does not necessarily mean, but it might give the potential for some flexibility around the edges or where it might be difficult to use one vaccine. It might give the facility to use the AstraZeneca vaccine.
Professor Butler, we'll leave it there for now, but thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us this morning. Professor Corina Butler.
Okay, thanks.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.